The gospel verse is from the book of Matthew, chapter 14, beginning at verse 13. Now when Jesus heard this, he withdrew from there in a boat to a deserted place by himself. But when the crowds heard it, they followed him on foot from the towns. When he went ashore, he saw a great crowd, and he had compassion for them and cured their sick. When it was evening, the disciples came to him and said, "This is a deserted place, and the hour is now late. Send the crowds away so that they may go into the villages and buy food for themselves." Jesus said to them, "They need not go away. You give them something to eat." They replied, "We have nothing here but 5 loaves and 2 fish. And he said, "Bring them here to me." Then he ordered the crowds to sit down on the grass. Taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, he looked up to heaven and blessed and broke the loaves and gave them to the disciples, and the disciples gave them to the crowds. And all ate and were filled. And they took up what was left over of the broken pieces, 12 baskets full. And those who ate were about 5,000 men, besides women and children. The word of the Lord.
In the gospel reading for today, Jesus is not having a good day. He has found out that his relative, his forerunner, John the Baptist, has been killed. Finally, his prophetic denunciations of King Herod have proved too much, and Herod had him beheaded, had him killed. And not only that, but Herod, once he thought, okay, I've got rid of this pesky John the Baptist who was harping about me, but all of a sudden, this Jesus shows up, and Herod doesn't know what to make. And Herod actually wonders if Jesus is the ghost of John the Baptist come back to haunt him. So Jesus is not only mourning, but he's in danger. And so he does what most of us would do. He withdraws to a quiet place. He gets in a boat and sails away. But while some, like King Herod, rejected him and wanted nothing to do with him, all sorts of other people were looking for him. And so Jesus is surprised that when he lands his boat on a far shore, the crowd has followed him and found him out. And they're there waiting for him. Now, I know what I would do if I found that. I'd get right back in my boat and sail away to someplace else. But thank goodness Jesus doesn't act that way. Jesus' heart goes out to them, right? Their very real misery is met by his mercy, and the result is compassion. And his compassion flows forth in healing for all these people. And he heals the whole day long until it's evening. And it becomes time for that necessity in all of our lives, where we need to replenish this body, where we need some food to eat at the end of the day. Well, Jesus' disciples there are trying to be Johnny on the spot there, and they recognize the problem, and they want to impress Jesus, so they come up with a solution, and they come to him and say, "Lord, it's late, everyone's hungry, there's no food here, so why don't you send everyone away so they can go into the neighboring villages and buy food for their suppers tonight?" You know, it makes a lot of sense. It recognizes the real need. It recognizes the scarcity. It assumes there's no resources there in this wilderness place. And it assumes that naturally then people have to go and find the resources somewhere else. But it doesn't make any sense at all that Jesus does it. He has another solution. He comes up with this brilliant line, "They don't need to leave. You feed them." Here's the deal. Jesus looks at this situation and he does not see scarcity as his disciples does. Jesus sees enough resources right there with them. He doesn't need to look any further, and he implies they shouldn't either. You see, the disciples, as we often do, focused on what they lacked. Jesus focuses on what they have. And what do they have? It seems little enough. 5 loaves of bread, 2 fishes. I was meeting with pastors, and we were talking about what we're going to preach on this week. One of the pastors pointed out the obvious. He says, 5 and 2, that's oddly specific. Is there some meaning to that, those two numbers? And we all sat there and shook our head. We couldn't figure it out. But then I read the answer to that question this week. 5 plus 2 equals 7. 7 in the Bible is the number of holiness, the number of completeness, the number of God. In God's throne room, there's going to be seven candlestands. It took 7 days of the week to create this wonderful universe that God has made. So there is significance here. It's not just a tiny amount. It's a holy amount that's right there. Now the disciples have a real choice. Is there not enough food? Or is there this wonderful gift from God right there in their midst? So let's sum up. People close to realize to Jesus see his serving. I'm sure his disciples couldn't help but be moved by his compassion for these people, how selflessly he gave himself to them. They can't help but want to be part of helping these people. So when they see the problem that it's time to eat, they suggest a solution that makes sense to them. Go elsewhere. And Jesus challenges them to give. Whereas they saw only scarcity, Jesus asks them to see what they have. And when they come forward with what they have, he asks one other thing before he can use these resources that he have. He says, give it to me. Let me have it. And when they offer it into his hands, what does he do? He prays and blesses it. He makes clear that this is a holy resource from God. And it's no longer not enough, but now it is more than enough. He moves us from our perception to God's reality of the situation. So then he gives back these gifts, meager as they seem, so that they can share them. Not out of scarcity, but out of God's abundance. And there's so much left over that they have 12 baskets. Another oddly specific number. Does 12 have any significance in the Bible? Of course it does. 12 tribes of Israel, 12 disciples. Again, it's a holy number, right? The spiritual reality in that situation does not work in the same way as physical reality works for us. That's what Jesus let these 5,000 people know, but it wasn't just 5,000. Notice the clever way that the author of the story puts it. He fed 5,000 men, but, oh, by the way, there were women and children, so it was actually double that. So much abundance, overflowing. So often when we shift our view from scarcity to possibility, it works that way for us, too. Years ago, I was on a canoe trip in Boundary Waters with some people, and we'd been out for over a week, and it was our last day. We were coming into camp. We were going to be able to eat a nice hot meal in the camp at noon, but we had breakfast, and so our last night where we found our campsite, we stumbled upon a whole mess of wild blueberries. So we picked up a whole little pail of them, and it was my job to cook the next morning, so everyone looked at me and said, Steve, we want blueberry pancakes for breakfast. So I got up early, got the fire going, and looked through the Duluth pack, the big backpack that we had, and I was rummaging around looking for the pancake mix, and I found the little plastic bag that was labeled pancake mix. Well, there wasn't much in it. Well, I poured it into a pot, and my hand slipped a little while I was pouring water from the canteen into it, and I poured too much water in, and it was soup. I thought, oh no, what now? Everyone is looking for pancakes. I'm never going to hear the end of this. So I thought, let's look in there. There might be something to thicken this. So I dug through the pack, and there in the bottom was a plastic bag with some yellow stuff in it, and it read cornmeal. And I thought, that's kind of like flour. So I dumped it in. And I stirred it up, and it got it a little thicker, but it still wasn't good enough, and I was just desperate, and I thought, oh, they're going to just kill me if they don't have these pancakes. So I went back to the pack one last time, and there was this plastic bag of brown powder, and it was labeled chocolate cake. Cake is flour. So I threw it in. It was the perfect consistency for the batter. I threw the blueberries in there, stirred it up, fried them up over the fire. Guess what? On the last day of a camping trip, there is nothing, nothing better than chocolate cornmeal blueberry pancakes. If only we look. If only we look. When I was talking to these pastors about this miracle that Jesus does, Someone raised a very interesting point. She said, okay, Jesus has just spent all day healing these people. Why does he have to feed them in addition? Wasn't the healing enough for them? Well, God has a long history of providing food for his people in the most unlikely places. It's what God does. It's how he cares for us. Way back in the Old Testament, when the people of Israel escaped slavery from Egypt, they went out into the desert, and they were wandering around, and they were so worried about food, and some even said, we should go back to Egypt because at least we won't starve to death in the desert. And what does God do? He provides this bread-like substance called manna for them in the wilderness, in the least likely place. There's that wonderful little story about the prophet Elijah who prophesied a famine on the country there, and everyone was running out of food and worrying about starving, and so was Elijah, and cried out to God, and God said, go visit this widow and ask her for food. And he went to, knocked on her door. He said, do you have any food? And she said, well, I have just a handful of flour and just a little bit of oil. I'm going to stir them together. I'm going to bake them into a little loaf of bread. And my son and I were going to eat that, and then I guess we were just going to have to wait for to die. And Elijah said, if you share your food with me, your bread will not run out. The flour will be magically replenished, and it was. There's this miracle of Jesus feeding 5,000 people, plus many, many more, right there in the wilderness. There's the Lord's Supper, where on the night in which he was betrayed, when there was nothing but death and despair, betrayal all around him, the least likely place, what does Jesus do? He gathers his closest disciples together, and he feeds them with bread. Bread that's much more than bread, saying, this is my body. And as we preachers often point out, one of the most common images, the favorite image in the Bible of what heaven is going to be like, it's going to be a heavenly banquet where God gathers his people and feeds them again. There's feeding in the past with the manna in the wilderness. There's feeding in the present with the Lord's Supper. There's feeding in the future with the heavenly banquet. It's all one great act of God's love for us. And he asks us, by feeding us, to open our eyes to see beyond, beyond the physical scarcity to spiritual abundance, beyond not enough to the gift of God that is everywhere, beyond our limited perception to God's unlimited reality. And he challenges us to be part of it too. He couldn't have performed this miracle without the gifts of his poor, fearful, unfaithful disciple. He intends to use us and our gifts for his generosity. What he's trying to do to us is open us up in us a place big enough to let the blessings flow out, as opposed to our clinging on and worrying about not having enough. The ultimate example of that is Jesus on the cross. When he was nailed there, what were his hands like? They were literally stretched out as far as they could be, opening his heart as much as it could be. There in the face of death, his heart was open. There in the face of all loss, Jesus is trusting that there would be abundance. And when he was stabbed with that spear, what came flowing out of his side? Blood and water, the fluids that are present at birth. In the least likely place, there, because Jesus is open, life can flow out to all of us. You know, so often I want to be like the disciples. When I see needs around me or other people want things from me, so often I sometimes wish, I just want to be left alone. I just want to get in a boat and sail away. Other times, though, when I really feel the call of God to do something, when I really want to reach out and touch people, again, I try and talk myself out of it, saying, who am I? I don't have the resources. I don't have the ability to do this. But the best of times are when I offer whatever I have to God and let God bless it so that I can share it, and I am always surprised by what God can do with it. Now, at this point, it would be great to have a wonderful illustration of that from my life. And I have many, but I've used most of them in my sermons. So I thought, well, it's not always all about me. It's about you. What's important is that you open yourself up to that experience. So here's the challenge. When you feel an urge to do something for God or just want to reach out to somebody around you, instead of either shutting yourself off or going to the old excuse, I can't do that, I don't have the resources, take the step back and ask God this: God, I don't know if I have the resources, but show me what I have. Show me the resources that I have right now. And when God shows you them, no matter how small or tiny or inadequate they look, offer them back to Him so that He can bless them and then dare to share them. And maybe, just maybe, you'll have the wonderful discovery that they were always more than enough. And not only were lives blessed, but your life was blessed as well. Amen.